Although the Parsha of Kisisa is arguably dominated by the Chetah Egel, nonetheless, there are quite a number of matters that are discussed in the Parsha before we get to the Egel. That's why Rishon and Sheni are so long in Kisisa. They don't wish for any Yisrael to take it personally, especially if you paid so much for Shlishi. And therefore, everything from the beginning of the Parsha up to and including the Egel itself are contained within the Kohanim, the Kohen and Levi, Rishon and Sheni, who were clear from the Egel. One of the matters that's discussed in the beginning of the Parsha is Shabbos, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. Having discussed the Mishkan for the number of psukim, I mean, even Parshas Kisisa is not without the Mishkan. The components of the Mishkan are mentioned from the beginning of Perek Lamed Aleph, and then we get to Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayomer Hashem El Moshe Lemor, Vata Daber B'nei Yisrael Lemor, speak to B'nei Yisrael and tell them, Aches Shabbos HaTishmeru, to keep the Shabbos, Ki osi b'ni uveinechem nadoraseichem, this is the sign between me and you, ladas ki ani Hashem mikadishchem. To know that I, Hashem, am making you holy. Now contextually, Rashi comments that the mention of Shabbos comes after the Mishkan to tell you that the building of the Mishkan does not supersede or override Shabbos, as if to say, build the Mishkan, but nonetheless, rest on Shabbos. The Ksava Kabbalah asks a simple question, and the truth is that Chazal and Rashi have already spoken about it. Namely, why is Shabbos mentioned in the plural? Again, the Pasuk says, Ach es Shabbosai tishmeru, keep my Shabbosos, or Shabboses. It's true, of course, there are a number of Shabboses in the year, quite true, but nonetheless, it's the same day. We speak about Shmiras Shabbos. Elsewhere, the Torah says, Zochores es Yom HaShabbos, and it's the one day, and it's 50-odd times in the year, but it's the one thing. What is behind the plural of Shabbos HaTishmeru? Indeed, as far as the halacha is concerned, the Rashi and Eruvin and Tzadik Hei explains that Shabbos comes to include Yom Tov. There are actually numerous types of Shabbosos. Yom Tov is also considered to be a Shabbos. The Ksava Kabbalah, as is his way, takes a slightly different approach. If we ask the question, what is Shabbos for? What do we do on Shabbos? The truth is that Shabbos has two parts to it, has two aspects to it. One of them, interestingly, is negative, and one positive. The negative, or shall we say slightly differently, one is passive and one is active. The passive is easier to discern, for Shabbos is a day of rest, and rest is passive. It's defined by things that we don't do. We don't do malacha, and indeed the malachas that we don't do are derived from the Mishkan, which is another lesson of the juxtaposition of Shabbos to the Mishkan. So we have, shall we say, the physical aspect of Shabbos, which is ceasing and resting from physical malacha, productive labor. But there is another aspect to Shabbos, and that is that the resting from malacha is not the end point of Shabbos. It exists essentially and creates a vacuum, one could say. The Sheish Yisrimei HaMaaseh, throughout the 6 days of the week, we're doing things. And then comes Shabbos and we stop doing those things. We stop doing those things in order to allow us to do other things. That is to say, The day is cleared through resting from malacha in order to be filled with something else, in order to be filled with higher pursuits, with more spiritual pursuits, And indeed, the word Shabbos itself really has two meanings. The word itself, and this is the specialty of the Ksav Kabbalah, to take every word in Lashon HaKodesh and examine it from all angles. Shabbos means to rest, but of course Shabbos also means to return. Shavti, Shavti v'ra'isi. And in a sense, what that means is that we rest from Malacha to allow the other aspect of ourselves to return and engage in things which are more tachlistic. And it's very interesting to note that this relationship between resting from the physical in order to allow more primacy of the spiritual is embedded within Shabbos itself, within the day of Shabbos. For as we know, the Pasuk says, it's in Bereishis and we say it in Kiddush on Friday night, Vayichal Elokim Bayom Hashvi'i Malachto Asher Asa. Hashem concluded Malacha, that is to say, he finished creating the component parts of the world Bayom Hashvi'i. And of course the question is, well, there's only 6 days. Kisheshias Yomim Asa Hashem Es L'Shamayim V'Sa'aretz. How then can we say that he concluded on the seventh day? He concluded on the sixth day and rested on the seventh day. And Rashi discusses this in Parshas Bereishis. And the Medrash says that there was an aspect of the world that was created on the seventh day. By ceasing the physical creation of the world at the end of the sixth day, that allowed for the introduction of the final element of creation, which is the spiritual aspect of creation. So we thus have something of a paradox. The Shavisa, the Menucha, the resting actually allowed for something else to come into existence. And that remains true for all Shabbosos. That is the higher goal of Shabbos, that the resting from the Sheishes Yemei Ma'aseh should allow something else to dominate the day. And it's fascinating to consider. And when you hear a question like this, you wonder why it never occurred to you, unless it did already. But we know, and we mentioned before, that Shabbos is not the only day that's called Shabbos. Yom Tov is also called Shabbos. Okay, and what happens on Yom Tov? We rest from Malacha. Now, not all Malacha, quite true. Melechas Ochol Nefesh is Mutter, but in principle, Malacha is Asur and Yom Tov. Asks the Pachad Yitzchak, why? It's a disarming question. After all, if anyone asks, why do we rest from Malacha on Shabbos? The answer is because we commemorate the fact that Hashem created the world in 6 days, and then he rested on the seventh day, and therefore we do likewise. Okay? It's a good answer. It's the Torah's answer. So now let's keep going. And why do we rest from Malacha on Yom Tov? What does that commemorate? Did Hashem rest from Malacha on Yom Tov? There's no traction for such a statement. So what room is there for resting from Malacha on Yom Tov? That's a footnote's question. And the answer, says Pachad Yitzchak, is if you understand why we rest from Malacha on Shabbos, you'll understand why we do so similarly on Yom Tov. Namely, on Shabbos, it's not the commemoration per se, but on Shabbos, physical Malacha was halted in order to allow for the introduction of a spiritual aspect into the world, called Shabbos. That is true for Yom Tov also. For each Yom Tov also represents the introduction into the world of a spiritual concept, of a spiritual force. On Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, Pesach, the Jewish existence, Jewish identity, Shavuos is the Torah, and Sukkos is the Anani HaKavod, the closeness between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those are also key spiritual concepts. They are called the Shalosh Regolim. They are the three pillars of Judaism. And as surely as on Shabbos, to make way for the weekly spirituality of Shabbos, we cease and physical Malacha is put to the side, so to on Yom Tov. To allow for the primacy of the spiritual concept that Yom Tov celebrates, physical Malacha is likewise put to the side. It's a fascinating insight. Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, this is what is being referred to. by the mentioning of Shabbos in the plural. Ach es Shabbosos hatishmeru. Meaning, it doesn't mean keep my Shabbosos, as to say 52 in the year. Shabbosos, the plurality of Shabbos, exists every week. Shabbosos hatishmeru means be sure to keep both parts of the Shabbos. There's two Shabboses every Shabbos. One is ceasing from halacha, but the other, as the pasuk goes on to say, and the words now read differently, what's it all about? Ki osi beni uveinechem nedoraseichem. This is the sign between me and you. Ladas ki ani Hashem mekadishchem, for you to know that I am making you holy. Once a week, you need to invest in that. That's the second part of Shabbos. Be sure to keep both of them. And that's the full fulfillment of Shabbos. We've mentioned a number of times the Shem Shmuel comments. The Gemara tells us in Masechah Shabbos and the Kuf Yutes, Kol Hama'aneges HaShabbos, anyone who enjoys the Shabbos, Nosten lo kol mishalos libo. They give him all his heart's desires. That's pretty good. Says Shem Shmuel, I know people who keep Shabbos faithfully. Would I ask them if all of their heart's desires have been fulfilled? It's a work in progress. But the Gemara says, "Nos no kol mishalos libo." That's quite a thing to offer. What does it mean? Says Shem Shmuel, we've mistranslated the Gemara. We translate inaccurately that if one who keeps the Shabbos and enjoys it properly, they give him all his heart's desires in the sense that they fulfill all his heart's desires. Whatever he wants, he'll get it. But in Lashon HaKodesh, when we speak of fulfilling one's desires, that's not called Nosnim lo kol mishalos libo. That's called Memalim kol mishalos libo. Like we say in Kiddush HaKodesh, Chayim sheyimalu mishalos libenu letova. The Gemara never says that all his heart's desires are fulfilled. Who knows if his heart's desires should be fulfilled? What does he want? The Gemara is saying something else. If a person keeps Shabbos properly and connects and taps into what Shabbos has to offer, they give him his desires. That is to say, he is presented with what he should desire. Nosdim of kol mishalos libo. Perhaps the day-to-day of during the week, between Wednesday and Thursday, we forget what's important, and perhaps we want other things, lesser things, more mundane things, more temporal things. But if we connect with the Shabbos, by the time we're finished, by the time we make Havdalah, we want different things. We've received a different wish list. Nosdim no kol mishalos libo. A person enters into the week wishing for different things. He's received new wishes. Will they be fulfilled? That's up to him. And that resonates, of course, very clearly what the Ksava Kabbalah is saying. That is the goal of the fulfillment of Shabbos. And that's really the gift of Shabbos. Matona achas, yeshli bebeis genozai, says the Gemara in Shabbos. It's a gift to be taken advantage of. And as his final comment on this point, says the Ksava Kabbalah, this is the meaning of the Gemara, also there in Shabbos, in Daf Kuf Yud Ches. It's a well-known statement. If only the Jewish people would keep two Shabbosos, they'd be delivered immediately. And, of course, the question, Mefarshim are wondering, why two? I mean, we're Jewish, right? Why two? Why not one? What does the second Shabbos have that the first one doesn't have? I mean, but the first one wasn't good enough, so why would the second one be good enough? And if we keep one, are we half redeemed? Says the Ksava Kabbalah, Shtei Shabbosos doesn't mean two consecutive Shabbosos. Shtei Shabbosos means both parts of the Shabbos. If we go through every Shabbos, and of course, resting from Malacha is non-negotiable, it's of the severest of the prohibitions, that should never happen. But that's half of Shabbos. But if we get the second half at the same time, so of course we have Nigolim, we'd be on the way to Geula itself. All of our orientation would be reset, our goals would be recalibrated. And that's Miad Nigolim. So these are certainly important things to think about. Shabbos, it's a gift that accompanies us every week. It's there for a reason. And this is the insight that is gleaned from the usage of the plural achat shabsosai tishmeru, the classic comments of the Ksava Kabbal. From here, let us come to consider for a while the Cheta Egel. This, of course, so much to say, so much we're not really qualified to say. It remains a mystery when all is said and done. But if we take a look at Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yud Tes, and this was one of the tragedies of the Egel, what we lost. Pasuk Yud Tes of Perek Lamed Beis, Vayihi Kasher Karav El HaMachaneh, as Moshe gets closer to the camp, Vayaris Es HaEgel UMecholos, he sees the Egel, he sees him dancing around it, Vayichar Af Moshe, Moshe became angry. Vayashleich Miyadav Es HaLuchos, and he threw the Luchos from his hands. Vayishaberos Am Tachas HaHar, and he smashed them at the foot of the mountain. Now, the simple reading of the Pasuk clearly identifies the breaking of the Luchos as Moshe's idea, which, according to the Gemara, was subsequently endorsed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yasher Kochecha Sheshibarta Otam. It was the correct decision, but at the time it's Moshe's decision. There is a well-known Medrash. It's in the Yalkut Shimoni, that Moshe saw something, in addition to what the Pasuk says he saw. Ra'a sheporach ksav mi'aleihem. He saw that the letters flew up from the luchos. They were deleted in front of him and rose. V'shlichu mi'ada. There is a version, I believe, of the Medrash which says that the luchos became too heavy for him to carry. It was the letters that, because they are stone, I mean, they're enormous stones, one couldn't naturally carry them. The letters gave them buoyancy, allowed Moshe to carry them, just like the Aron carried those that carried it. Without the letters, it's impossible to hold the Luchos. That would need to be reconciled with a simple reading of the Pasuk, that Moshe, he threw them. If they're too heavy to carry, you can't throw them, you just have to drop them. And it wouldn't be a matter of his decision anymore, because if he's not capable of holding them, he can't decide not to break them. But be that as it may, the primary point of the Medrash tells us that Moshe sees the letters are floating upwards, and then he breaks the luchos. We need to try and understand or gain some insight as to what is the significance of the letters floating up. What does that represent? And an approach to this matter, which is quite unusual, is to be found in the Chidushim of Rabbi Eliyahu Gutmacher, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva Eger, and he was known as Kodesh Kodoshim. People used to come for him for brachos the whole time. My father told me that in the summer, as was the minhag, to get a few days break, he would go to a resort, just to be by himself a little bit, but everyone just followed him there. One year he was I think financially it didn't work out for him, and he was in touch with the resort. He told them he can't make it. They paid for his vacation. They made a fortune out of it, because the entire resort then became flooded with people. So it was a worthwhile investment for them. So Rav Eliyahu Gutmach, in his Chidushim to Maseches Chagiga, and Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, and he takes us on a bit of a journey here. And we begin by referring to the Gemara. It appears twice in the Shas, in Megillah, on Daf Beis, on Beis, and also in Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Gimel, or Kuf Dalet, with regards to the five final letters, the Osios Hasofios, what's called Mansepach, the Mem, Nun, Tzadik, Pei, and Kaf. Says the Gemara, Mansipach Tsofim Amorum. These letters, they were said, meaning they were instituted by the Tsofim. Who are the Tsofim? Tsofe, the seers, the Nevi'im. So this was a takon of the Nevi'im, to have this concept of final letters. Mansipach, Tzofim Amor. Now the Gemara is very unhappy at this statement before it's been qualified. And the reason why, firstly, says the Gemara, is that if this did not exist before the time of the Nevi'im, that means that when the Torah is given, there's no such concept of these final letters, and they have now changed the way a Sefer Torah is written. They can't do that. They can't change halacha. It invokes the famous drasha, Eile HaMitzvos, which is the final pasuk of Chumash Vayikra, or according to some, Chumash Bamidbar. And the Gemara says, Eila mitzvahs, this is it. These are the mitzvahs. Mikan she'ein ha-novi rashai l'chadesh dover me'ata. No novi can change anything. He can't bring in any new matters that are on a Torah level. The Rabbanon, of course, can add to Rabbanon, but this seems to be at the heart of how to write a Sefer Torah, and tefillin, and mezuzos. Eil ha-mitzvahs, it can't be done. This is the sister drasha to Lo Bashamayim hi. There can't be any more input once the Tariq mitzvahs have been given. So how can you say that the Tzofim instituted these final letters? It's illegal. Moreover, says the Gemara, not only is it wrong halachically, it's also inaccurate historically. We have reliable information that these final letters existed well before the Nevi'im, for we have a famous statement which says, regarding the Luchos, Mem v'samach b'neis hayu omdim. What does that mean? The letters on the Luchos were engraved all the way through. Now, for almost all the letters of the Aleph Beis, it's possible to engrave from one side to the other, whereas part of the letter is still held, because it's still connected to the body of the Luchos. The only exception or exceptions will be letters whereby part of the letter isn't connected to anything. If you engrave all the way through, it should fall down. If you take the letter Samach, if you engrave the shape of the letter, then the inside of the Samach is yet Luach. But it's not held by anything. That was an ace. But we say, Mem v'Samach. B'neis hayu omdim. This was true not only of the Samach, that the middle was suspended miraculously, but also of the Mem. Now, only a final Mem will require that miracle. The final Mem is the square to the circle of the Samach. If there was no such concept of final letters, there would be no final Mem. And the normal Mem can be held by the body of the Luchos as surely as all the other letters of the Aleph Beis. And therefore, says this is the second question of the Gemara. We see clearly that the final letters existed from the very beginning, from the Luchos. Luchos is the beginning of the writing of the Torah. How then can you say that the Nevi'im instituted Mansepach, these five final letters? And the Gemara gives an answer which is disarmingly simple. Shachachum v'chazru v'yastum. Quite true. These letters were originally existed, but they were forgotten, and it was the Nevi'im that reinstituted them. Okay, so we're rephrasing slightly, as if to say, no one is saying that the entire concept was introduced by the Nevi'im. That's not true. They couldn't do that, and it existed before them, but it was forgotten, and they brought it back. And all of the Mefarshim are up in arms. Because how can one say that the final letters were forgotten? There's certain things that one forgets just because one forgets. To forget the final letters of the Aleph Beis would require something of a conspiracy. It would take concerted effort on the part of the entire Jewish people. And if they could all agree on that, then Mashiach would come anyway. There's certain things that it's impossible to understand how they could forget. It's in a Sefer Torah. You open up a Sefer Torah. You'll see it. You almost couldn't forget it if you tried. But apparently the Jewish people forgot it without trying. How can it be? The final letters are unforgettable. as the Gemara says, they were forgotten. It's also interesting to consider that just in terms of the phraseology of the words of Chazal, Divrei Chachomim, they say Mansepach, these final letters, Tzofim Amorim. They were said by the Tzofim. Who are the Tzofim? Well, we quickly come to understand the references to Nevi'im. I think if we were translate it into English, we would say it's a Nevi'im. Throughout Shas, they're called Nevi'im. And here they're called Tzofim. Now, what does Tzofim mean? It means they can see afar. That's one aspect of Nevi'im, but why are they given this very special title, this very specific designation with regards to this Takana? Everything else, they're just called Nevi'im. Which is a good shaila. Says Rav Elio Gutmacher. And it's on his shoulders. The first point we need to understand is that in absolute principle, meaning at the barest level, there is no such thing as a final letter. That is to say, there may be two ways to write a mem, for example, either open or closed. There may be two ways to write a kaf, maybe straight or not. But whichever is the way to write it, it should always be written that way, whether it's the middle or the end of a word. If the mem is to be closed, should always be closed, even in the middle of a word. If it's to be open, should always be open, even at the end of a word. There exists no essential concept of a letter changing because it's at the end of a word. Now, that's something that we will see clarified quite soon. But that's the first point to be aware of. Secondly, we need to appreciate that the letters of the Aleph Beis, and this is referred to often in Chazal, they represent, if we say that the Torah is the blueprint for creation, and the Torah is the energy of creation, the letters of the Aleph Beis are the building blocks of Torah. Each letter represents a component part of creation. They're called osios. An os is a sign. It represents something. And therefore, the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis represent the 22 forces that are then arranged and combined to give us the world as we have it. And interestingly, we're talking about the Mishkan in these parshas. The Gemara says this in Maseches Brachos in Daf Nun Hei with regards to Bezalel. Bezalel was eminently qualified to create the Mishkan, says the Gemara, Yodeya Haya Bezalel. Bezalel knew, Letzarif Behen Osios Shenivu Behem Shemayim Va'aretz. He knew how to combine the letters of the Aleph Beis in the way that they were combined in order to create heaven and earth. That's further confirmation that they represent the elements of creation. Now, there's just one problem. Because if we say that the letters of the Aleph Beis give us the world, they are the raw materials, so to speak, with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, but the nature of the world changed, as we know, fundamentally, as a result of the Chet of Adam HaRishon, the world was a different place. It was a cataclysmic event, the first Chet. The question is, but how do the letters of the Aleph Beis give us the world? How do they portray the world? If it's the way it was before the Chet, so then how can the world be different? And if it's the way afterwards, then how could it ever have been different? Says Rav Elio Gutmacher, this is the point. Actually, what happened was that the nature of the world changed as a result of the Chet of Adam HaRishon. That change was brought about by those letters changing. They changed, and then the world changed. What does this mean? If we consider and itemize the fallout from the Chet of Adam HaRishon, things changed drastically. We will find them in the following five areas. Number one, of course, death was brought into the world, as far as we know it, right? B'yom achol chamimeno mos tamus, that concept didn't exist before the Chet. Number two, as far as the Jewish people are concerned, and the concept that embodies the Jewish people, they now undergo persecution and Golus, etc., in the imperfect world that's represented by the subjugation of the Jewish people and what they represent. Number three, evil has become a much more dominant presence in the world. It was originally easier to maintain and to control. Now it's overwhelming. Number four, man's existence has become more physical. The way that he eats. The Medrash says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Bezeh sapecha tocha balechem." You'll eat bread. And Adam was mortified by this. He says, so me and my animal, we're the same. The animal eats wheat and so do I. I just put it in the oven before I eat it. Because from a certain point of view, man has become more like an animal. And finally, as we say, bezeh sapecha, the very ability for a person to maintain himself, parnosa, with all that goes with that, maintenance, has become much more difficult. Bezeh sapecha tocha balechem. Everything came easy to man. His needs were taken care of. It was easy living physically. That's now become much harder. Says Rav Eliyahu. Initially, all of the letters, all of those five letters, Mansepach, they were as we have them at the end of the word. But that was all there was. The mem, as we see it at the end, all mems were like that. All nuns were straight. All kafs were straight. All peis were straight. All tzadiks were straight. And that changed. Why did it change? Because if we consider what those five letters represent, they actually embody the five changes in the world that were brought about by the chet of Adam HaRishon. Mem, if we take them one by one, mem represents Misa. The original mem was sealed. That is to say, there was no opening for Misa. But that letter opened up now. The mem becomes mem pesucha. There's an opening now for Misa. All of the other letters used to be straight and tall, and now they've become bent and subdued. The letter nun. And nun represents nefila. As the Gemara tells us in Brachas and Daftalah, there's no nun in Ashrei. Because nun is a letter from which it's hard to recover. Nafla velo sosiv kum. So there's no nun, we go from mem to samach. When the nun is bent over, a nun kefufa, it represents the fact that man is much more now imperiled. He's much more prone to nefila, to failure, and all that goes with that, all of those hardships. That's the nun kefufa. Tzadik kefufa, what is a tzadik? Tzadik is a tzadik. The ability to be a tzadik. It used to be much more straightforward. The tzaddik was upright initially, but it's become stooped over. It's become compromised. It's become weakened. The tzaddik kofof now. Number four, pei. Pei is the mouth. The pei used to be straight. That is to say, it used to be upright again, and the pei represents, as the mouth represents physical eating, it represents all physical engagement. That used to be a more elevated pursuit for man, but it became degraded and demoted as man now eats like an animal as well. The pears become kofof, it's become stooped over and compromised. And finally, the letter kaf. Kaf is a person's hand. That's a person's ability to earn and to receive from the world. We talk about Yegia kapecha kitochel. Yegia kapecha is your handiwork. The kaf used to be posh. It used to be a simple matter to earn and gain sustenance from the world, but no longer. Bezeh sapecha, that's become more complicated. It's no longer so easy. And therefore, as all of these letters change, they represent and initiate the changes in the world as a result of the chet of Adam HaRishon. And that's how the world remained. If there were any letters to be seen, if there were, post the chet, You never see a closed mem. You never see those straight letters, because the world isn't like that anymore. But that remains true until Matan Torah. What's important to realize about the giving of the Torah is that that episode, that event, represented the potential, the ability to get back to the level of Adam Rishon before the Chet, and with it to bring the world back to that level. As the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Mem Zayin, that when the venom of the snake, which represents everything that's wrong with the world, stayed with people until Matan Torah, and then it was removed. Posko zuamason. As the Pasuk says, we say in the Shir Shayom for Tuesday, Ani amarti Elohim atem uvnei ayom kulchem. That's a reference to the time of Matan Torah. Hashem says you could have been on high, as high as man was originally. And indeed, that was represented by the script on the Luchos. Because the Luchos representing Matan Torah were to usher in the new world, which is really the original world. It was the Chadish Yameinu Kekedem. And thus you find, interestingly, there's a drasha where it says that Hashem's writing was Choros ala Luchos, as we say in Pirkei Avos. Al tikri Choros ela Cheirus. The engraving represented that freedom from, as the Medrash explains, freedom from Malach HaMoves, and freedom from Golos, and freedom from Yisurim, and freedom from all of those things that were represented by the world after Adam HaRishon. That had the makings of being removed and reversed to the original state. And thus we say indeed, Mem v'samach b'neis hayu omdim. The mem on the luchos, it was a miracle, meaning it was suspended. That means the mem was square. Of course it was square. And by the way, if that new ksav is to be reintroduced into the world, it's not only the mem at the end of the world, at the end of the word. All mems. That's the new mem, and the new, all of those letters now. Man sepachar back. But that gives us now more acute appreciation of what happened at the time of the Egel. The Egel was the fall from that state. As indeed the Pasuk says, Ani amarti Elohim atem, uvnei ayom kulchem. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, said. That's how it could have been. Achein, however, ka'odom temusun. Ka'odom temusun means exactly like Adam, because the Chet HaEgel in its way was a rehash of the Chet of Adam, and we lost that Madrega like Adam lost it. But in terms of our discussion, let's consider now what the Luchos look like. Because as Moshe goes down and is met by the situation of the Egel, the writing on the Luchos are now fundamentally incompatible with the state of the world as has been brought in by the Jewish people. If they've fallen from Sinai into the Egel, so there's no room yet for those letters, because like Adam HaRishon, they can't be part of the world. That's why the Medrash says, Ra'a ksav pareach. Moshe saw script, letters, flew up. Says Rav Eliyahu Gutmacher, we understand that all of the letters from the Luchos disappeared. Not necessarily. And the Pasuk doesn't say Ra'a es haksav pareach. He saw the script. Ksav pareach. Letters were flying up. Which letters? The letters that couldn't be side by side with the Jewish people at this time. The letters of Mansepach. And so, it turns out that to date, at that time, there was only one person in the history of the world who ever saw those letters. And that's Moshe, as he saw the first Luchos. But they never made it to the Jewish people. Those letters flew up. The Luchos were broken. By the time we get the second Luchos, there's no Matzepach anymore. There's no final letters. There's no closed mem. There's no, because everything's stooped over again, and the mem is open again. Achein ka'adam temusun. And it's very interesting to note, and the pasuk states very explicitly and pointedly in this week's parsha about the first luchos, v'hamichtav michtav elokim hu. It's a godly script. For the second luchos, Hashem still writes it. He says psal lecha, it's the laning for Tanis, and also this week's parsha, psal lecha shnei luchos avodim karishonim, carve out two new luchos, v'chosavti ala luchos es hadvarim asher hayu al luchos harishonim asher shibarta. Hashem says, I will write on these luchos. What will I write? Es hadvarim. Are all the words that were on the first luchos, they'll be on the second luchos. But it doesn't say that the ksav that was on the first luchos will be on the second. The ksav has changed. The dvarim will be there. But it doesn't say that the michtav will be there, because it wasn't. And therefore, we understand that the notion and awareness of these letters in the consciousness of the Jewish people was very easily forgotten, because only one person ever saw them, and that's Moshe. He may have spoken about it, but it was no longer in vogue, because from the time they got the second luchos and onwards until further notice, there is no closed mem anywhere, not in the beginning, not at the end. There is no straight nun and kaf and pei anywhere, not even at the end. It can be forgotten because it's not appropriate to the world as we have it. Shachachum, so it was forgotten. That's the mystery of the forgotten letters. It'd be hard to remember them. No one had any practical application for remembering them. No, nothing was written that way. The world isn't ready for those letters yet. And thus it remained. Until, at a certain point, the Nevi'im came along. What are the Nevi'im doing? Well, a number of things. But a focal point and a central point of what the Nevi'im are doing is they are prophesying and foretelling to the Jewish people about the future. As we know, Yeshaya, and each Navi really in his own way, about La'osid Lavo. Well, part of La'osid Lavo is that those letters will come back. And therefore, as part of the presentation of their nevuas, they brought back those letters. Now, it happens to be that when the letters come back, as far as Rav Gutmacher is concerned, there will only be them. Quite true. We're not there yet. So where do they put them? They put them at the end. Because that's how these letters will look. At the end. Basof, this is what the letters will look like. And that's why presently they look like that, at the end. And that's why in this capacity they're called Sofim. We don't refer to them as Nevi'im. Nevi'im represents the Navi, he has prophecy, he has this divine flow of information. Here they're called Sofim because these letters represent their vision of the future. Because that's what these letters will look like in the future. And that's why the Gemara says, Shachachum, Bechazu V'yostum, and we currently have an interesting situation whereby, in principle, the letters should be stooped over the way they're in the middle of a word. But we always finish by writing them the way they will be at the end. That's the reinstitution on the part of the Tzofer. And this will explain to us one unusual occurrence. It's in the Navi Yeshaya, in Perek Tes. It's the Haftarah for Parshas Yisro, according to Minhag Ashkenaz. It begins with Perek Vav, Srofim Om Dimimalo, but then there's a couple of psukim that are attached to Parshas Yisro from Perek Tes. And one of them says as follows, Lemarbe HaMisra, for exalted standing, Ulesholom Eid Kates, unending peace, Okay, very nice. It is very nice. It's about the future. If you look in the pasuk, you will see that the mem in the word lemarbe is square. It's a final mem. in the middle of a word. It's the only time we have it. And what does it mean? This is the one case where the whole pasuk is about the future, and therefore the letter becomes written as it will be in the future, where it's no longer just at the end of the word. Even in the middle of a word, a mem will be square. And thus you have a quote-unquote final mem in the middle of the word, l'marbe ha-misra u'l'shalom en ketz. Perek Tes, Yeshaya. Yeah. Haftarah for Parshas Yisro. Start in the end and work your way back. So this is the explanation of Rav Eliyahu Gutmacher. It's really quite amazing and very special to have that window into his world and see these. Such, on the one hand, the questions are so basic, but the answers are far from basic, as we have seen. From here, let us just take a look for a final few moments at Perek Lamed Gimel. And Perek Lamed Gimel is already, if Perek Lamed Beis is the eagle, Perek Lamed Gimel is Moshe's dialogue, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to make things right. And we find an interesting pasuk. In pasuk Yud Dalet, again, Perek Lamed Gimel, pasuk Yud Dalet. Vayomar, this is Hashem speaking to Moshe. Ponayelechu, my presence will go. What does that mean? So the background to Ponayelechu is actually earlier on in Perek Lamed Gimel. It's a very enigmatic phrase. My presence will go. What does that mean? But have a look at the beginning of Perek Lamed Gimel and Pasuk Gimel. Well, Pasuk Beis and Gimel. Pasuk Beis says, V'shalachti lefanecha malach, I will send a malach before you. V'geirashti es haknaniyah, mariach eti, rapuzi achivi vayivusi. El eretz avascho lavu dvash, as Pasuk Gimel continues, ki lo e'ele bekirbecha, I will not be amongst you. Ki amche erevata, because you're stiff-necked people. So Pasuk Beis and Gimel is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, distancing himself from us. You're still on course for Eretz Yisrael, which is Pasuk Aleph, but I'm not going to take you there directly. I'll send a malach. You don't really, it's not right. You don't deserve it. Or Am Kishay Orefat. That's a terrible thing. We're still part of Hashem's program, but he's not amongst us. Pasuk Yudalud, which says Ponaye Lechu, my presence will go, represents a rescinding of that decree. As if to say, okay, it won't be through a malach. I will come back. I will be with you. So what Rashi says, Ponaye Lechu. Ketarguma says Rashi, Lo Eshlach od malach. It's okay. I'm not going to send a malach. That's finished. Aniba atzmi elech. So somehow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that point said the original decree of malach, which was a very estranging and distancing decree, was rescinded. The question, as Rav Soloveitchik asks, is why? Now, of course, when we say why, what we mean is we don't find that there was any petition about this. It just seems to have been a few psukim ago, Hashem said it's going to be a malach, and then 10 psukim later he says, okay, there's not going to be a malach. But normally, if we have some type of decree, it's there for a reason. It's there because the Jewish people and or represented by Moshe need to respond to it, need to, as Hashem says, I will destroy the Jewish people. Moshe davens, they shouldn't be destroyed. And that's important. And then the decree is rescinded. But Moshe had to daven for that. Hashem says, Va'ato hanichali, leave me alone and I'll destroy them. It says the Gemara says in Brochus, Daf Lamed Gimel, leave me alone means if you leave me alone, I'll destroy them. So don't leave me alone. That's what the Gemara says. It's a message to Moshe. Moshe's meant to argue. He's meant to plead. He's not meant to accept it. Similarly here, Hashem says, I'll send a malach. But no one says anything. And then 10 psukim later, okay, I won't send a malach. What happened? says Rav Soloveitchik, something happened. It's to be found in Pasuk Zayin. In the interim, something did happen. And this is an amazing comment. You see, Pasuk Zayin says, Moshe yikaches ha'ohel. Moshe took the ohel, that is to say, he took the Mishkan. He moved the Mishkan away from the camp, far away. This is now the Ohel Moed. It's not amongst you. And anyone who wanted, literally anyone who sought after Hashem, which Unkelus explained means who wanted to know what the mitzvah was, or the halacha was in any situation, or Yetzei el Ohel Moed. He would leave the camp, and he would go to the Ohel Moed, Asher michutz lamachane. That was the setup. Says Rav Soloveitchik, that's what rescinded the decree of us being guided by a malach. Why? Because the question is, and it's really, it's one of the critical questions about the Egel. We made the Egel. How did it happen? What exactly happened? Whatever it was a terrible blunder. What does it say about us? And essentially the question is, does this constitute or represent a fundamental incompatibility between us as a people and Hashem? This error so early on, does that mean forget it? We can never really have that relationship? That's what it looked like. And therefore, if Moshe goes away and we make an egel, so Hashem says, so then maybe we're not that close. So I'm not going to abandon you, but this, it's going to be through a malach. What reverses that? Says our Soloveitchik, is if you want to know the nature of the Jewish people and their relationship with Hashem, see what happens when Moshe and the Ohel Moed leave the Machane. If they're not really compatible, the Jewish people, now life is easier than ever. Because the Mishkan and Moshe have left, they can make another egel. Or maybe just live an easy life. Hashem won't bother them, they won't bother him. And what did they do? When they saw what they'd lost, when they saw that it moved away from them, they moved after it. If the Omo is not in the Machaneh, so we'll go. Wherever it is, we'll follow it. When Hashem says, I'm moving away, so Bnei Yisrael moved closer to him. That's why they're called Mevakish Hashem. And that's how the Jewish people expressed that they made a mistake, but it was a lapse, and it doesn't define them. It doesn't embody them. Because ultimately, where Hashem is, that's where they want to be. And if he's gone outside the Machane, they'll go outside the Machane, wherever it may be. And if it's far away, they'll go far away. Hashem said, enough of that has happened to demonstrate to the Jewish people themselves, more than anything else, that we really are connected. So the decree is rescinded. It's not going to be through Malach. Panay Elechu. They are really Mevakish Hashem. The egel could be sorted out. So says Rav Soloveitchik. And I believe this may answer another question. As we know, and we may need to discuss this more at length, but just to refer to it, there exists a well-known machlokas between Rashi and Ramban as to how to understand the order of events in these parshas. Truma and Tetzaveh are the commands for the Mishkan and the Big Day Kahuna, then Kisiso, which is dominated by the Egel. The question is, were those instructions given before the Egel or afterwards? Ramban says before, the Psukim or Kisidron. Okay, for the Ramban, everything's in order. But for Rashi, they are out of order. And the Egel happened first, before there was a Tzivur for the Mishkan. We have an example of Ein Mukdam U'Mu'cha BaTorah. Okay, so be it. But the Mefarshim point out that wherever we can, we don't content ourselves by merely detecting that the parshas are out of order. If we can, we'd like to try and wonder why. Why would they be out of order? It's not arbitrary. There must be an overriding concern more important than the chronology. And I believe based on this discussion, indeed there is. For this is the very question. It seems that the first national act that we did post-receiving the Torah is the Egel. As a first act, The question is, does that define us? Does that represent who we are? Within 40 days, Egel. Does that mean that the whole relationship can't work? Is it a fundamental incompatibility? And indeed, there were many who argued and pointed back to the Egel and said, yes, that's exactly what it means. So the Jewish people essentially are no different than anyone else. The famous statement of the Medrash with regards to Hanukkah, Yavan comes, and it represents the conceptual confrontation. Kisvu lachem al keren ashor she'en lachem chelek b'lokei Yisrael. Right on the horn of an ox, you have no portion with the God of Israel. It says Rashi in his commentary to the Medrash, and the Maharal in the Sefer Ner Mitzvah, in the introduction, what's the keren ashor? What's the horn of the ox? The horn of the ox is a reference to the egel. The ox is that's the family. They saw Tavnis Shor, they made the egel. And really what they're saying is, you need to sign off on the horn of the ox because it represents the egel, and that represents the fact that Eilechem Chelet, Belokei Yisrael, you're the same. But of course we're not the same. And even though it's the first thing we did, it was the product of many, many things. It's not the product of our essence. It's the product of bad habits and confusion, and we just came from Mitzrayim, and all the things that Moshe says to defend us, which Hashem accepts. But the way that that's represented by the Torah is that the Torah doesn't write the Egel first. Because even though historically it was first, and therefore historically it's correct to put it first, but essentially it is incorrect to put it first. Because if you put it first, it means what first things normally mean. And here it doesn't mean that. That is exactly the point. Because first and foremost, we are compatible with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are His people who chose us for that reason. And therefore, even though historically the instructions for Va'asu L'Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Sochem, they'll come after the Egel, but they're put first. Because the Torah wishes to establish first and foremost that we are deserving of the Shekhinah amongst us. We are fundamentally incompatible. Once conceptually that primacy has been established, then we can move on to what historically was the first event, but essentially is secondary to us and for which we're able to recover. So these are the lessons from Parshas Ki Sisa, and we see through seeking after Dvar Hashem, that's what demonstrates that we really are Hashem's people, and that's something that continues until our time, and we look forward, Mitz Hashem, to the vision of the Tzofim. Open mem, become a closed mem, le marbeh ha-misra, le shalom en-kates, le achinos ha-le-sadab, mishwa, le-vizdoka, mi-ata, ve-ad-olam, amin.